Hello, everyone, and welcome to Capital Link's Trending News webinar series. I'm Daniela Guerrero with Capital Link, and it's a real pleasure to have you with us today. We are joined by Mr. Moritz Fuhrman, co-CEO and CFO of MPC Container Ships, a leading provider of small to mid-sized container ships serving regional trade lanes. MPC trades on the Oslo Exchange under the symbol MPCC. Before we dive in, a quick note. Today's discussion is strictly for informational and educational purposes. It should not be relied upon as investment advice or as an offer to buy or sell securities. Also, Capital Link has the privilege to work with MPC on investor relations. Now, a bit of context to set the stage. Following Q2 2025, MPC reported a $1.2 billion backlog, declared a 5-cent dividend at a 50% payout, and announced 4,500 TEU new build orders, all backed by 3-year charters. With that backdrop, let's explore the market environment, company strategy, and the road ahead. Moritz, thank you for joining us today. It is a real pleasure to have you.
Thank you very much. It's always great to be online with Capital Link.
So let's start with the big picture, Moritz. July saw fixing activity slow, but forward coverage picked up sharply, leaving very few positions into 2026. How do you see this balance playing out in Q3 and beyond?
I think, generally speaking, we have been against a sort of negative sentiment in the container market. We have seen actually quite positive chartering activity for the better part of the last 2 years. And that is a trend that continues. You have rightfully pointed out that there's a slowdown in activity, although we see some forward fixing activity, which is sort of the explanation itself being that there is a massive scarcity, especially in the feeder segment, for available tonnage in the short term. So that actually there's not much activity given there's no vessels to be fixed. So that's obviously also applicable to MPCC. You mentioned a backlog of $1.2 billion translated into coverage. That means essentially that we're fully booked for this year and 90% or almost 90% for 26. So from a charterer, from a liner operator perspective, there's little availability, and that sort of prompts them to look into positions that are far ahead out in 26. One example is Maersk picking up tonnage in the summer of 26, arguably is slightly larger than most of the vessels that we are operating, but those are 5,500 TEU vessels with delivery in the summer of 26, and they've been fixed for 3 years at a rate of allegedly north of $30,000 per day. So That's obviously a very positive signal from a market perspective, and that sort of should alleviate some concerns from people that see a slowdown in activity, which is not really a slowdown. It's just a function of, you know, scarcity of available vessels in the chartering market.
Thank you, Moritz. And how do you weigh locking in duration now versus keeping some exposure if the charter market surprises to the upside?
I think our answer to that is, so I mentioned the negative sentiment on the container market, which is there for a reason. The order book is relatively large. You have all sorts of geopolitical turmoils, uncertainties. So it's very difficult, obviously, to form a strong conviction on the container market going forward. So from that perspective, we and MPCC, we will continue to be conservative as we have been in the past. So we have always been emphasizing the long-term coverage by locking in longer-term charter over the short-term gain. So you rightfully mentioned there is a possibility for us to pick up higher rates in the short term, and then obviously also potentially keeping some upsides if the market should be trending north from where we are. But again, as conservative as we are, we will continue to emphasize on the coverage, which I believe investors will appreciate. So the most recent fixtures that we have done, depending on the asset size, is between 2 and 3 years. at rates which are between north of $20,000 per day, even up to $30,000 per day, again, depending on the vessel size. And that's something we will continue to do going forward. And that's also something that we've been doing quite successful for the past years.
Yeah, well, and so this goes into my next question. Charter rates have remained resilient, even as freight rates slipped, and secondhand values are also still on the rise. What do you think is fueling that demand? And do you think that could liners' forward fixing appetite actually accelerate the firming trend?
I would say, given the uncertainty, I'm not sure whether we will see a significant increase from where we are today. The current positive charter market, again, is a function of scarcity of available assets, but obviously there's also an underlying positive demand that we're seeing, a structural demand, but then also the current Red Sea situation where we have a major disruptions ongoing in the market. So the whole mix of events is helping, and that's keeping up charter rates. You see a bit of a divergence between time charter rates and freight rates. So the freight rates are the so to speak the top line revenue of the line operators, which is going south as we speak. So there's a bit of a divergence. Will charter rates follow? So historically speaking, you have seen a stronger correlation as we have now. I'm not sure we will see it in the foreseeable months. Again, given the scarcity of assets and also a bit of a diversion between the larger sizes and the smaller sizes, the feeder trades becoming more and more important. And that's why we believe also the structural demand that has been quite positive, that I mentioned earlier, will help to sort of keep the levels that we have right now. We are certainly not at the levels we have seen in 21 and 22, but even at the levels we have today, from an historical context, it's fantastic rates and durations, and that also translates into very healthy margins on our fleets, given a cash break even that is significantly below the 20,000 or the 30,000 I mentioned earlier.
Thank you, Moritz. And of course, markets don't move in isolation. Geopolitics and trade policy are reshaping trade flows in real time. The Red Sea closure has added roughly 12% to ton miles, while US trade policy is introducing new uncertainties from tariffs to potential port call fees on Chinese-built vessels. How have these factors impacted MPC in Q2? What are you most focused on moving forward?
So from the three market implications you mentioned, two of them they had an implication on our business. The latter one not yet, because it hasn't gotten into force yet. So the Red Sea closure you mentioned, 12% based on our figures is 11%, but in any case, it's a significant addition of artificial demand to the market. So that helps lifting charter rates and durations to the levels we have seen and we see now. It also helps absorbing a large part of the order book, which is, as we speak, larger than the structural underlying demand. But right now we have a sort of positive disbalance between demand and supply. Secondly, the tariff situation, which is on and off, so it's a bit erratic as we speak. But during Q2, we have seen, and that probably had one of the biggest implications, at least from a short-term perspective. We had the suspension period of introducing tariffs between the U.S. and China. That has prompted a lot of shippers to front load or to front haul cargo, and that has been lifting freight rates to very, very high levels, and that has been obviously then translating into supporting charter rates and durations. And on the third topic, the sort of let's call it indirect tariffs on Chinese operators, Chinese-built ships, etc., is not yet in force. When it comes and if it comes into force as it is proposed right now, container vessels below 4,000 TEUs are being exempted. So essentially 98% of our fleet is being exempted. So there's no implication for us chartering those vessels to our customers, who will be then the parties actually having to bear the cost on the USTR. I think generally speaking, it can cause some sort of disruption, and disruption is always good for shipping. And we believe it could be net positive for the feeder market. We know that a lot of the liner companies have already been reshuffling their entire fleets, meaning that they have been sort of taking away Chinese-built ships to other trades and have been introducing non-Chinese-built ships to trades that are related to the US. So it's kind of circumventing the tariffs. There's other scenarios where they might be using hub ports in the Caribbean to use bigger ships, Chinese-built ships, to go in there. And from there, you have smaller vessels then feedering the cargo into US. So from if that should be turning into reality, then obviously that's been helping, that would be helping feeder demand. But that's, yeah, the jury is still out there, and it's yet to be seen how exactly it will play out. But we believe if introduced, it should be net positive from a feeder perspective.
Thank you, Moritz. And then now, geopolitics aside, I think the other big driver of the cycle is supply. Let's talk about how the fleet is evolving, both across the industry and within MPC's own renewal program. Feeder ordering picked up slightly in Q2, but still trails the replacement gap. From a market standpoint, how much of today's order book do you expect to translate into net new feeder capacity versus simple replacement, or once you factor in LOI conversions, delivery slippage, and scrapping?
That's impossible to answer, because the net fleet growth is heavily depending on the sort of the stand of the market. Meaning, if the market continues to perform as we see now, people will also continue to trade very old vessels. So you have almost zero recycling activity during this year, but also last year. So the typical 25-year life cycle is not really applicable as we speak. So it's very hard to translate that into a net figure. So you mentioned in isolation the MPCC focus, which for us is the 1 to 8, 9,000 TU bracket. So and those the fleet profile is quite interesting. Given that you have an order book, as you mentioned, not being sufficient to make a meaningful replacement. So the order book right now is between 8, 9, maybe 10% that is being delivered this year, and then going into 28. I don't think you have any deliveries in the feeder space for 29. So in the next, so that those 10% are being delivered in the next 3 years. And on the flip side, on the trading fleet, you have 25% of the existing fleet being 20 years and older. I just mentioned if the market is very healthy, it continues to trade. However, if the sort of concerns of the overall market should turn into reality, and you might see a normalization of rates and asset values, and in addition, you have the regulatory pressure that will be increasing. So we deem it very likely that a big part of those 25% is being pushed out of the market. And then again, if you have 10% order book with this 25%, obviously that's a mismatch. So that's why, again, against the overall negative sentiment, large order book, yes, heavily tilted towards the bigger vessels. But in the feeder segment, we actually think there's a quite interesting supply dynamic, which was obviously also one of the arguments for us to order more ships. You mentioned the 4,500 TEU vessels in the beginning. So that was obviously also one of the arguments for us to execute on this new building order, because from a long-term perspective, we believe it makes a lot of sense to be active now in the new building space, and making sure that you have a future-proof fleet going into the future, and have a scalable vessel portfolio, which obviously is only possible if you being active in the new building market, and potentially also in the second-hand market. Overall speaking, the order book is at I think now north of 30%, which historically speaking is never good in shipping. But it is also the first time in history where you have such a large disconnect within the order book itself, meaning you have a 10% and a smaller sizes, and you have up to 50% in the very large segment, and that's a segment that we are not really focused on.
Thanks, Moritz. Thank you for that. You've also sold older tonnage and taken dual fuel deliveries and placed orders for four 4,500 TEU new builds with attached charters. What's next in terms of balancing renewals, retrofits, and opportunistic S&P over the next 12 to 18 months?
Yeah, so the last 2.5 years, I think we have found a good balance between those three measures, being new build, modern secondhand, and retrofits. We have managed to invest when the new builds are being fully delivered to invest $800 million. If we can replicate that into, as I mean, you said 12 to 18 months, but if we, you know, if we can replicate that into the 12, 18, 24, maybe 36 months, I think that would be a very good outcome. Again, it always heavily depends on, you know, where's the market, what is available. I've been, I think, successfully opportunistic, meaning finding the right deals at the right point in time. And then also obviously combining the right capital structure with the respective investments. Right now it's more on the new building side because we're in a position to combine an order with some time charter coverage, sort of providing an immediate de-risking. We wouldn't go out and order on a speculative basis. Right now we believe that in a secondhand market, prices are not justifying sort of the risking that you can get at the same time. And on the retrofit side, we are continuously in discussion with our charterers, with whom we have done quite a lot in the past. So we usually go for a cost sharing model, and we have identified a few more vessels in the fleet where a meaningful retrofit could make sense, and that obviously also helps, you know, future proofing our fleet. So, you know, to pin me down what exactly we will do in the next 12 to 18 months is again difficult, but you know, looking past and seeing what we have done, and if we were to be able to replicate exactly that, I think that would be a fantastic outcome. I'm sure it won't be looking exactly like that, but I think the direction that we have been on is the right direction.
Thanks, Moritz. And you mentioned you were talking to your charterers. What exactly are you seeing that they're asking when it comes to emissions and fuel flexibility?
Yeah, I think no one has the ultimate answer when it comes to propulsion technology. We have seen charterers that have been going all in on certain technologies and then have pivoting to a different dual fuel technology because it's a very complex situation. It heavily depends on fuel availability. So I think charterers appreciate a degree of flexibility. And with our most recent new building order, so it's a conventional deal, so conventional fueled vessels. However, we have had various discussions with classification societies, and we have a pretty clear view what the costs will be to retrofit such a ship in the foreseeable future. So let's say in 3, 4 years, 5 years time, there might be a clearer view on whether methanol is the way to go, or LNG, or maybe even ammonia. And for all those three technologies, we have a pretty clear a path to retrofit, which will help. But right now, we see that people appreciate a degree of flexibility. So they're certainly not going all in. We ourselves, we have dual fuel methanol vessels. We would like to have some exposure on the LNG side. We would also like to have some exposure on the ammonia side. And again, also from that perspective, we wouldn't be going all in, but we like to understand the sort of the implication of each technology and how future proof it is actually.
Yeah, of course. So naturally, this brings us to the financial side of the equation. With liquidity approaching $360 million and added debt flexibility, where's your comfort zone on leverage, and how do you prioritize between renewals or deleveraging and shareholder returns?
We, from a leverage perspective, we're not necessarily having a carved in stone percentage KPI saying doesn't have to be north of 50% or 60% or whatever. It's more driven by respective projects, cash flow visibility. Again, I mentioned being conservative on the operational chartering side. We're being equally conservative on the financing side. So the longer the cash flow is on a certain vessel, the higher the leverage can be, and vice versa. So that's a bit the approach on a project by a project basis. Overall, I would say we are less focused on leverage ratios and LTVs, rather than keeping a certain amount of vessels on the balance sheet debt-free. Right now, we have 27 vessels debt-free in our balance sheet, which is around 50% of our fleet. It's a large number, and it gives us a lot of flexibility in terms of fleet-wide break-even rates, in terms of potentially raising more money going forward, if interesting opportunities arise, or if need be. To generally speaking, raise liquidity. So the argument of flexibility weighs a bit more from our perspective than just having a strong KPI in terms of fleet-wide leverage ratio. In terms of balancing your capital allocation, again, looking back historically, the last 3 years, we have been dividending out $1 billion to investors. We have increased the amount of debt-free vessels from almost none vessel in the fleet to 27. Leverage ratio used to be 40, maybe 45%. Now we're at 30%. Again, on returning capital to shareholders, we have been dividending out a lot, and also the 800 million I mentioned earlier. It's also serious money that we invest into the fleet renewal. So again, we're not saying it has to be split in three thirds, and that's the money that we allocate. We always have been opportunistic. There's sometimes window where you raise your leverage to make sure to execute on interesting fleet renewal opportunities, and then there's times where or windows where you harvest a bit more on what you have built in the past and distribute to shareholders. But in any case, we have from a capital allocation perspective, we have a standing dividend policy. We have a strong backlog, so also from an investor perspective, there's clear visibility as to what can be expected in terms of dividends, and I can only say that we'll remain to be conservative on the balance sheet side, but also on the investing side.
Well, I think it's certainly a good place to be in. So your NAV still trades at a premium discount to market levels. How do you balance reinvesting in growth with delivering higher shareholder returns? And what steps are you taking to make sure that the market fully recognizes MPC's value proposition?
Yeah, the valuation question is always a bit difficult in shipping. So most of our peers they experience this trading to discount to NAV. So obviously, what's the real NAV of a company? Obviously, you have broker quotes, and you should know yourself what your fleet is worth. But there's certainly a discount. That's true. We have been selling quite a few ships this year, which is always a good sort of sign to the market where NAV should be, because I think the implied NAV on those sales has always been around 30 NOK. And we're trading at 18, or between 18 and 19 as we speak. So that's obviously a sign sort of to show that there's actually ways to monetize on the NAV. Secondly, we believe that having a very clear formulated dividend policy or distribution policy is also helping from a valuation perspective, and that's also why we're strongly in favor of returning capital to shareholder as we have done. That should certainly help the valuation. And then the question always becomes, when you invest into new assets, be it on new building side or on the secondhand side, you arguably you're buying at NAV. And then there's always the argument you should rather buy your own stock than invest into new tonnage, which obviously on paper is mathematically it's certainly right. On the flip side, you would argue, I mean, right now our average age is 13, so buying your own stock, you buy into a fleet of 13, 14-year-old ships. And we all know shipping has aging assets, usually over life span of 20, 20, 25 years. And we all know that shipping is inherently cyclical, which very, very strong swings and volatility. So if you have an opportunity, as we have now, to reinvest certain funds next to paying a dividend, reinvest funds in fleet renewal and fleet growth, making sure that you have a sizable and scalable fleet once you run into the next upcycle, I think that's certainly the right thing to do from a long-term perspective, because we're less short-term minded, we're very long-term minded industry people, and we believe there's much more value in investing now into the right asset that will benefit from the next upswing in the container market that will certainly come. We have talked about the supply side in the segment that we're operating in as we speak right now. I think in the foreseeable future, there will be a supply side crunch, and we all know what that means in shipping. So you would rather want to be on the side of owning, right now we're at around 55, 60 vessels. You certainly want to be in that bracket, maybe even 65, 70 vessels, talking about fleet growth, and not having the funds in the past and not being able to reinvest, and then obviously the fleet gets older, you sell off assets. So I think from that perspective, it makes sense. And you mentioned balancing, and if you find the right balance between keep paying a dividend, don't go crazy on the leverage. Go for long-term charters, and if you have the funds still to sort of reinvest, and building a long-term, a long-term valid portfolio of the right assets, I think that has a lot of value, and that then will hopefully also be sort of recognized by investors and unlocking some of the discount that we see right now. And we all know that stock market is very sentiment driven, and the sentiment has been a bit negative around containers, so hopefully that negativity also fades away, and then we'll also unlock some of the discount that we see right now.
Thank you, Moritz. Now, I think this has been a very thorough and insightful webinar. Thank you for joining us today. The interview will be available on demand at www.capitallinkwebinars.com and on Capital Link's YouTube channel. Thank you all for joining us. We look forward to seeing you at our next discussion.
Thank you very much.